Gotta slide my lunch up and hide it since we're gonna be on Facebook Live. Are we on? Hang on, let me hide my condiments. Take my carrots out. Look, I'm eating carrots, Ma. There you go.
You know she's watching too.
Not on Facebook Live. No, that's not.
She knows, she's not a Facebooker?
No.
Well, my mom is. Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
She's a Facebooker.
Oh no, my mom. My mom's too busy.
For better or for worse, she's a Facebooker.
My mom's too busy running around helping out, you know, my wife and I and our kids. You know, she's swamped.
Speaking of, and I know you don't like to talk about it, but that was an eye-opening segment yesterday on 41 News last night. If you didn't see it. On your daughter, and you and I have known about this for many years, and my wife, she kind of had an idea, but she was livid, and you guys did a wonderful job of representing your side of it, and it's really embarrassing what the Blue Valley School District is doing to you guys. I know you can't say it, but I could say it. It's ridiculous. For being a taxpayer that I am, I pay a lot of taxes in Johnson County, for my money to go to a lawsuit against a little girl who's trying to get her books taken care of from a public school is embarrassing. So, you know, that's my little soapbox, and probably you can't say much about it, and I don't expect you to say something, but that's
what are they
going to
do,
right.
Sue me?
Yeah, I mean, to spend $120,000, I think that's on the low end of what they spent.
Yeah, $130,000 is what Jessica said that they confirmed. My attorney says that their bills are probably much higher, but the Jessica McMaster's added in there is $130,000. I can tell you that our rail cost, because we've had to do it all ourselves, was $23,000. And $6,000 that went to buying the braille printer you need. So really, if you already had it, which the district does, it was $17,500 worth of cost. I mean, it's, you should understand, it is not cheap. It is not an easy, you know, educating the special needs kids is not easy, but it is also your federal obligation.
Yeah.
Okay, you do take federal funding and state money. You're obligated to educate the kids, even the ones that are hard.
Yeah.
Especially. And so that means the world to me, Tim.
Especially
it really does. And please, same to your wife. I mean, that's so sweet of her.
And that's what my wife said. You know, we should be taking care of the kids that especially need help. And they need to be, and for her to do what she's doing, playing the piano and wanting to work for NASA and all those kind of things, we should be cultivating a wonderful young lady like that and giving her every opportunity to have success and not trying to limit a person. Because once again, you know, when you give somebody an opportunity to fend for themselves and learn to fend for themselves, and you don't have to take care of it on the back end. You know, I mean, there's too many times when kids with special needs fall through the crack, and then you have to pay for it on the back end because, you know, the special needs, they can't take care of themselves and do things,
yeah.
And they're not taught the right skills to do that.
I had a lot of people reach out to me on Twitter, and that was one of the things I'm saying, is that what is going on is basically they fail the special needs kids' educational values. I mean, there are smart kids, mm-hmm. you know, that want to learn, but if you don't give them the resources they need to learn, they don't. They drop them down. They fail them.
They get disenchanted.
They labor them remedial. The kids become disenchanted. And what happens is that, you know, 70% of the legally blind people in this country are unemployed. And then you pay for them as a taxpayer. You could pay thousands now, which you already are paying thousands
yeah.
now. Millions, hundreds of millions, the budget is for the district that is the Blue Valley District. And, you know, it's thousands now or it's literally millions later, because paying for all these kids to live for 40, 50, 60 years on welfare is a significantly higher cost, and all the district is doing is dumping it back on the state while they get more and more and more state money every year. And yeah. So
even for children who don't have disabilities like that, the dollars now compared to dollars down the road is huge.
Yes.
For people in her situation.
It's why we have those monies
yeah,
to educate them and make sure it's not just a country full of welfare.
Yeah. For people in her situation, it's even more pronounced.
It is.
And everybody knows my situation. I send my kids to Catholic schools, private schools, and I do not bat an eye when I have to pay my taxes. I'm happy to pay my taxes in Johnson County. I love living in Johnson County. I like the services I get in Johnson County. But this is something that really hurts me to know that some of the tax money I give to Johnson County is being wasted on a lawsuit to take care of a young girl who is striving for excellence. And, you know, that just burns me up. I don't, and you'll never hear me complain. And most people complain about paying for your taxes in Johnson County. You choose to live there. You choose to pay those taxes. And I also choose to send my kids to a private school, which I pay for, and then I pay for the taxes just like everybody else. And I'm not going to complain about that. That's my choice. But for this to happen for a young lady like that, it really it just boils my blood.
Her desire to learn should be applauded, not impeded.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The one thing I would say is, you know, and people have reached out to me with good questions.
Whatever we can do, we got to be able to do something. I love what you said. We'll talk to the politicians. I will go knock on doors for you, whatever you need, because we were motivated last night to do whatever we can to help you out.
Thanks.
Just like you tried to knock on my door at Saturday night while I was out to dinner with my wife. And yeah, I got these nasty text messages. You're going to bust my door in because you were in front of my house.
We were coming back from a wedding reception. And I'm like, let's pull down by Tim's house. Let's see if he's home. And so we did stop it. No, listen, thank you so much, Tim. It really does mean a lot. We've had so many great people reach out. And I do want to say this. You know, politicians get a bad name. I have had it. There are many. I don't want to say many because we don't have many politicians, but a number of them. And I'll maybe one day we'll name them, but are showing a lot of interest in this. And they recognize, you know, that there's an issue.
How could they not?
Well, they do. And the question is, how do you fix it? I mean, it really is kind of a runaway freight train. That's a complicated one, and we're not going to spend all day talking about school. I will say this, that one of the most common things people have reached out to me is my daughter does go to a private school. The reason she goes to a private school, however, is when we had to figure out where to send her to school, the Kansas State School for the Blind and Children's Center for the Visually Impaired come in and they recommend what your child needs to be successful in school. And one of the things a visually impaired child needs is what's called a TVI, a teacher for the visually impaired. And the way this is the problem, it starts your first day. They recommended collectively she needs five to 600 minutes a week. Okay, so call it 10 hours, right? Eight to 10 hours a week with a teacher for the visually impaired. The district offers you that time with a paraprofessional,
right.
which are people that are trying to get into the teaching industry. They have a want. The jobs are listed for $11 an hour. Okay, that's what the district pays, and they're not trained in Braille. they can't be. They don't know that. And so we said, okay, listen, we'll pay for it. We'll pay for the difference. You give us that 100 minutes, we will pay for the TVI to come in. And they said, no outside contract employees can be on our grounds. Mm. And so you have no choice. I mean, it's really like for a visually impaired child without a TVI, it's like going to school without a teacher. If you have a child who's fully functioning, fully able-bodied, and they said, listen, they're going to be in school for 7.5 hours. We'll have a teacher there for 4.5 hours. What would your reaction be? And that's really what we were left with and had to make a decision on what to do. Now, the district at that time said, well, we can't do that. The TVI is vital. The Kansas State School for the Blind says it. Children's Center for the Visually Impaired says it. This is what she needs. So we came. We said, what about a private school where we can have a contract person there? And the private school, it's our parish school, said, yes, we will take her. And great credit to Dr. Huppy, the principal,
very well.
who
great guy, great family.
I can't say what she said to us because I can't get through the statement.
That Huppy,
yes,
there's a lot of Huppies.
Yes, and she and anyway, she said, you know, bring her to us, and yes, you can have that TVI there, which has been absolutely critical for my daughter's success. And the district said, okay, we'll pay for the books and the sheets, and that's one of the things people say is, wait, why are they on the hook for books when you're in a private school, which is a great question. And the reason is because, one, there's a law they have to spend on private school kids whatever they would spend in a public school setting if they're a special needs kid. That's one. That's part of the law, which is a convoluted, hard to get through, and we won't go through it all. But the other part is the reason she's there is they wouldn't give her what she needed. So we were left with, what do? Enroll her in a school where she can't get what she needs, or do we take her over here where she can? And our expenses have been overwhelming long before we had to pick up. My wife is basically, and all credit goes to my wife. That's one thing. I kind of become like the front guy because I speak for a living. And so I was a lot of the sound bites on that story. And I have a big Twitter account, you know, relative to, you know, most people in town. And so a lot of people have reached out. My wife is really the hero here because full-time job. I mean, the plan was for her to go back to work as an occupational therapist. And that has gone away. Because her full-time job is basically as a Braillist, and a functioning TBI at home away from school. But you are given, and this is happening, and this is not about us because we can make it go. We've made it go for a year. This is about the families that have come up to me and said, we just had to pull our kid. I mean, we can't do it. They're not giving them, you know, my son the services they need. And somebody has to stand up and fight. Right. And that somebody's us.
Well, you guys are doing a great job, and really proud of you.
Well, thanks, buddy. It means the world to me. I mean, that's...
Really does. I mean, you and I give each other a lot of flack, and yeah. we're tough on each other, and that's what makes me better at what I do when you're tough on me. But I do appreciate what your wife
does.
Thank
you.
But hey, listen, let's flip over here because this to me was if you are a football purist and you love the X's and O's of football and you like scheming and you like breaking down and you like looking into more than just the hand the ball off, run, score, touchdown, yay. This was a wonderful game to break down and look at. Why is that? Because both defensive coordinators had the game plan of how to stop these offenses.
Right.
And that's why the first half was the way it was. You got to give all the credit.
It was a rock fight, as Bob Glauber likes to call it.
It was. The defensively, you know,
after the first drive.
Jim Schwartz.
Jim Schwartz.
Yeah.
Jim Schwartz really, I mean, from the run stunts to stop it to the inside blitz that the Chiefs have a hard time picking up with different stunts. I call them hey, diddle, diddle, three up the middle when you're bringing the nose tackle and you're attacking those A-gaps with linebackers or safeties. And then you flip it over to the other side, and guess what? They did the same thing. I mean, it's like both defensive coordinators met with the offensive coordinators and said, hey, what do they struggle against? And Peterson knows and Reed knows what they struggle against in that defense with a defense against that offense, and they did that. And that's why it was really a fun game to watch because you had this was a chess game. And the guy who won is the master chess player who knew how to make the adjustments and did a nice job of making adjustments. Was everything perfect? No. Because when you know exactly, well, not exactly, but when you have a really good idea of what formation brings which play or what tendency brings that play, then it's really, really hard as an offensive coordinator or an offensive player to move the ball. So both defensive coordinators really had a good plan, and they had to kind of throw away some of their tendencies and do some different things. But just watching both defenses, especially early, and especially the Eagles, I thought the Eagles really had a nice plan early against the Chiefs, and that's why Smith got knocked around a little bit early because a lot of the stunts, a lot of the blitzes were just weaknesses and protections that the Chiefs just can't pick up, even if everybody's blocking really well.
No.
So it was really a fun game to watch.
It was. And Andy Reid and his staff, they had the changes in the second half, just like against New England. We talked about Andy Reid certainly got the win against Bill Belichick. And I think that's the case against Doug Peterson, and I think that's the case Andy Reid against Jim Schwartz, because Schwartz did have a great game plan, and Andy Reid ultimately figured it out, and they ultimately got through it, and were having great success in the second half.
And it was almost a mirror.
In the fourth quarter, really the last part of the third and into the fourth.
It was almost a mirror, but the only difference was I thought that the Chiefs took a couple shots down the field, and listen, you're going to get sacked if you're going to hold the ball and look down the field. So I wasn't as upset with some of the sacks as I think everybody else was, because we've all asked our quarterback to get the ball up the field. And if you're going to do that, you've got to hold it a little bit longer. Now you look at the other side with Wentz, he got rid of the ball quicker. He was, you know, getting the ball out to Sproles, which is basically the offense that usually see the Chiefs run. Sproles had a wonderful game of catching the ball out of the backfield and making some people miss early, and then the Chiefs made some adjustments defensively to stop that too. But, and they made some plays, but it was almost a mirror image of each other going back and forth, making adjustments, and it was really fun to watch. And we can go through series by series or half by half or whatever you want to do, but just looking at this as a whole, it was really a fun game to watch two guys who know each other very, very well go up against each other.
Yeah, it was. And it was a complete chess match, and the Chiefs come out the winners in it. And is this a sign, you know, as you were chatting there, one of the things that came to my mind was, you know, they finished. That game to me smelled and felt, and we know, other than the first year, and we've detailed it before, Andy Reid, through his first four games, his most common record is 2-2. Then after that, he really takes off. And my theory is that the more game tape you give Andy Reid, the more he can break you down and beat you. And maybe that's not it. Maybe it's as injuries accumulate, he does a better job dealing with the injuries. And so you need teams to start getting banged up and losing guys. And then he really shines in what it is he can do. Whatever it is, he really gets going in the second, third, and fourth quarter. What I think is great of the season. What I think is great is here he is, he's winning now. And that Eagle game smelled just like the Titan and Buck game last year. Two home games against inferior, not bad teams, but inferior teams to what the Kansas City Chiefs were, and they never could put them away. Is this team definitively better this year than it was last year, or have we just got a quick snapshot here, and it's a couple of times that, yeah, Andy Reid and staff got the better of it, but they're the same team, and we're going to see some disappointing losses like that on down the road.
Now, I think with as many weapons right now as the Chiefs have, they have some different options. I think sometimes Andy Reid, especially offensively, was kind of locked into doing certain things because, you know, maybe he had a tight end but didn't have a receiver. Or maybe he had a running back and didn't have a tight end. Whatever. You know, but now it looks like, you know, you could stop one guy. All right? And you could compete against two guys. But it's hard. It's hard to limit three. I mean, you got Hill and you got Kelsey and you have Hunt. You have those three guys who can make plays. And now you're throwing in guys like Conley who made a nice, couple nice plays because they're limiting.
Didn't you love that 35-yard catch? That was a great catch by him, a great throw by Alex Smith.
Oh, my gosh.
I thought it was one of the – you know, we talked about it with Mick, who will be in here later for Sunday Soundoff, and he wanted our plays for the game. And I said, well, I think the Kareem Hunt 53-yard touchdown was huge. But I said my second choice, if you want something different, is give me the Chris Conley 35-yard – the Smith-Conley 35-yard pitch and catch was great.
At this point in the game, with the last couple of notes I have is Chiefs, do not get conservative. And then I wrote that down. The very next play, a great throw to Conley. And that's something they did a little bit different. They didn't get conservative. They took a chance down the field. They had it. They had it set up. That play was set up two or three series earlier. And they said, okay, if we get in a situation where, hey, listen, we're going to have an opportunity to ice this game down, this is the formation I want to run, and this is the guy we're going to throw to, because everybody was saying, hey, listen, we're not going to let Tyreek Hill beat us. And they took him out of the game, basically. That's why the Chiefs, to get him the ball, had to do all kinds of different weird things that Andy Reid loves to do, look at a single wing look or a motion look with a guy lining up and then coming back in a zip-zap formation kind of motion, and they had to find ways to get him the ball. But they set that play up, and people are like, well, that was a great call. Well, that call was made two series earlier. When they saw that formation, that was marked down and say, okay, listen, if we get in a situation where we need a big play to ice this game down, we got Conley one-on-one on the backside, we're going to throw it up. And I don't think that they had the confidence to do that over the last couple of years.
We're going to take a break here with Tim Grunhard. When we come back, we will get into Travis Kelce. Picks up, you know, brilliant player, but another penalty. Talk about Chris Jones' phenomenal game, Justin Houston's phenomenal game. I also want to talk a little bit about where Kansas and Missouri are as programs right now. And we mentioned some if not him, then who. I don't want to do too much of that because I think that's a little premature, but I've had people asking about it, so we did a little bit of it in the open. But get Tim's thoughts on those programs and what needs to happen and how long it does take to get them going. That's coming up next here in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Chiefs Hall of Famer Abner Haynes is 80 today. Only two North Texas players have been to more Pro Bowls than Haynes. I asked for either. North Texas State. Brian Waters is one. He's been to six. The other.
Yeah, wait a minute.
The other is in the Hall of Fame.
The other's in the Hall of Fame. So I've certainly heard of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mean Joe Green.
Yeah. Hey, 10 Pro Bowls and one perfectly tossed jersey.
In a Coca-Cola ad.
Yeah.
Great commercials of all time. Your kid, you've seen that where he's limping and he takes up, kid catch. Yeah, that's what I'm talking
about
here.
Probably the most viewed Kyle's television commercial
on our Facebook Live. You seen that?
Sports star ever.
Okay. So even the kids have seen it.
I think it's 40 years old.
I'm trying to find this Facebook Live. Is it under you guys, the program, or is it under 810?
It's under Sports Radio 810.
Sports Radio 810.
Both. It's under both. We'll see if Tim can figure it out.
I'm there.
You want to get a look at what your head is?
What does it look like?
Yeah, okay.
All I see is pictures of Gary Lezak on here.
She's the back of my
he's a big deal.
Giant dome.
Why wouldn't we promote exclusively Gary Lezak?
Well, you know, I mean,
he's a big deal.
He's got a book, you know.
No, he's got a book out? What kind of book? Is it a
children's
book?
Yeah, oh, really? Okay. With a couple of dogs in it. And
I get enough.
And Gary's in it.
Well, you know, he leads a sunny life.
He sure does.
Oh!
That's the name of the book, Tim.
I know.
Ta-da!
He sure does.
Tim Grunhardt leads a sunny life, goes out
nice,
to eat on
nice picture in the back, by the way.
You like that?
Yeah.
We got a shot of that? We've seen that on the, on the Facebook Live?
Whoa! There it is. There
it is. Yeah.
Put that on my thing here. Here, son. Figure that out. Put it on there so my friends can watch.
Make
my mom can watch.
Happen.
Make me happen.
Make Tim's
Make me happen. Me like fire. Fire. There. Me fire.
Yikes.
Before we move on to Travis Kelce, Curtis, you had one other nugget about that Chris Conley catch.
And a fact that will kind of highlight how important that play was. There was a play late in the first quarter. Remember, the Chiefs got the ball to start, went right down the field, kicked a short field goal. Eagles went right back down, kicked a field goal. And the idea at that point was, who's going to stop who? In fact, I think you tweeted, who stops who first?
Right.
Well, the Chiefs marched right into Philadelphia territory on the ensuing drive, and with 1:37 left to go in the first quarter, Tyreek Hill gets behind his guy, and Alex Smith missed him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And thought, oh, that play. And for a while, that looked like that's the play that might sink them. If you look at the NFL, the game book, they describe short pass, long pass. That was the last pass Alex Smith threw that was described as deep until 4:42 left in the game when he hit Chris Conley for 35 yards down the far sideline. 18 consecutive pass plays and 4 sacks without a deep throw. So that kind of shut that. For a while, it looked like he's not going to go deep again.
Yeah.
The one time he had to, Chris Conley beat his man. Alex Smith put it on his hands.
And let me say this, 251 yards, if he does that every game, he'll throw for 4,000 yards for the first time in his career. So that was still a pretty good yardage total. And we know going down the field's not his specialty. He did it against the Patriots.
But not to say that some of the pressures and some of the sacks weren't plays that were called down the field.
That's right. And I would rather him take a sack than throw a pick. Yeah. All right, that's always a better thing. I would like him to, when he doesn't see it, feel the pressure a little better and get rid of it. But he's a guy that runs for first downs and makes big plays with his legs. So that kind of guy's always going to take more sacks than the guy who, you know, Peyton Manning's going to get rid of it. He's never looking to go get a first down. So I like Alex Smith running for first down, so I'm going to live with some extra sacks. That's part of the equation. But I did think it was big to see him go down to Conley. I thought that was a critical moment and showed some confidence.
And a great throw.
I
mean, right
absolutely.
In the bucket.
It was a great throw. And so I think that was a tremendous success for Alex Smith as a follow-up performance to what was, I think, the best performance of his career against the Patriots in New England.
Before we get to Kelce, Mitch Morris injury, the same injury that I had against the Jets right after, oh, gosh, I'm drawing a blank. Who was the guy, the defensive end who was paralyzed in that game?
Oh, yes, give me a second. I'm wanting to say Joe Klecko and Mark Gastineau.
I can't believe I'm drawing a blank.
Dennis Bird, sorry.
But, right, you know, that play, you know, the both tackles got beat around the corner and Dennis Bird was going to sack and he hit the other defensive end. The quarterback stepped
Scott
up.
Mercer,
he had his head down. Yeah. The ball came out. I recovered the fumble, looked over, and it was one of the ugliest sights I've ever seen is a guy's face after being paralyzed. I mean, it was bad. I could still see it in my mind. The very next play, I mean, we sat there for about 45 minutes in a cold game. And I can't remember what the nose tackle was, but I was being bull rushed in the pocket, and I hopped back and popped my foot. And it was right in the middle, and that's the same exact spot, and it would look like the same exact injury. And I was out for – that was the longest I was out in my whole career for 3 weeks. That was a very, very miserable, miserable injury. And thank God I didn't have to have surgery unless I would have been out for the season. So I'm hoping and praying that Mitch is okay, but I could feel his pain. You cannot
what
push
is it
off.
Exactly? What happened?
There's a sprain. There's a ligament that runs across your foot, and it pops. It pops that ligament. If it tears it, you're in really big trouble. But if it just pops it, it causes inflammation.
A
and
partial
you have no
tear.
Strain.
A sprain is a partial
yeah,
tear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or it, you know, a partial tear, and it moves. And it moves along those small bones in your foot. And And he was in a boot, and I was in a boot. And it's a miserable rehab, and it's a tough rehab. and I feel for him. But I'll tell you what, Fulton came in, and that's why he's on this team. Because he could play all three of those positions, and he came in and just
they watching. Even had him playing some tackle in preseason.
Watching the kids snap and come in and the confidence in his snaps. And, you know, people always, you know, think it's just easy. You know, you remember you're a one-armed man for a half a second, and you got a big 330-pound guy mm-hmm. trying to run you over, and you got to deliver a ball, you know, using a shotgun, especially kind of with the laces at the hand, so the quarterback can catch it, especially in this offense. Remember, our offense, if he has to catch the ball and spin that ball in his hand to get the laces to throw it, it's too late. So there's a lot of things that go into that. And Fulton does a really nice job. He did a good job of filling in, but I feel for Mitch. So we're hoping that it's not as bad, but I have a feeling it's going to be a couple weeks.
I think they're okay going down one, right? Yeah. And what we've seen is when they run into going down two and three guys.
And
they're really down one already. Maybe we should say down two because Witzman is in for anger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's had some issues really here. Yeah. There. Penalties. And
yes. Yes. He has had some issues. And, oh, thank you. He's had some issues. But the other thing is Mitch does such a good job of kind of controlling the middle of that pocket and being athletic enough and keeping his hips down enough to have leverage of coming off of one guy and going to helping another guy or getting to the second level on the run, which Fulton struggles with a little bit. And if you look at the history of the Kansas City Chiefs offensive line and the Andy Reid era, the struggling is with inside blitzes. Not saying those inside guys are getting beat. It's just where they're attacking. They attack the inside because they know that the backs do what? The backs go out, and they're checking the end, and then they're getting out in their hot routes, or they're getting out for their dump-offs, and they know that there's nobody in there to help. So that's where they attack. And the part of this offense is if there's nothing there, nothing there, who do you throw it to? The back. So if the back is out in the pass game, then he can't be in the pocket. So that's why it's attacked. And that's why Sorensen, everybody's talking about Super Sorensen, who's hurdling guys in a single bound, that's where they were attacking. They were attacking the inside of the pocket because the Eagles do a very similar thing.
We're talking to Tim Grunhardt here in the program as we break down the Kansas City Chiefs live at our Rally House studios. Travis Kelce, so you're his teammate. What do you go say to the guy?
This is a tough one because you don't want to take the spunk or the spirit out of a guy.
That's what Andy Reid keeps saying.
But
three straight games.
Yeah, but you have to address it, and you got to let him know it's unacceptable. But that's the way he ticks. That's what makes him the player he is. The only guy I could think back to that was kind of like this that Marty had to deal with was Benny Thompson. You know, Benny Thompson was doing all kinds of antics, all kinds of crazy things.
Every play he made, it was something.
It was something, but it's what made him tick. It made him the football player that he was. And I think Travis, and nobody's going to say this, but I'm going to, because I kind of have the same – I had the same kind of personality, and I had the same kind of mental, kind of makeup as he did. He's always trying to prove himself.
Okay.
All right. He's insecure a little bit with his game, and he needs to get that. He needs to get that diesel rolling. He needs to get that fire burning inside of him in order to convince himself that he can compete. You know what? And you'd be thinking, he's a Pro Bowler. He's an All Pro. What? You're crazy. No, your mind. You still look in that mirror, and even if you're skinny and you're an old fat guy, you still look fat. All right. It's still in your mind that you're. Man, I got to do extra things to be great. I remember I'm not big enough. I'm not strong enough. I might be smarter than everybody else here, but I got to do all these extra things. That's why I would do all the crazy things before the game to try to get myself motivated to play. And he does the same thing. And it takes that
to make fear him drives tick. Him.
That fear drives him, and it puts him over the top. He loses it. He loses that. He just loses his mind. His brother called the teammates out and said, "Listen, just talk to him. Just keep on pushing and pushing. Eventually, he's going to lose it because he knows that that's the way he ticks."
So when he really needed
by the
to
way, for you
motivate
people,
himself.
His brother is a center, by the way, for the Eagles, if you guys didn't know.
That's right,
So at a point in his career where he hadn't proven himself, he needed that motivation, and then he found out it worked mm-hmm. or believed it worked. So whatever he was doing, he was a success. He thought, well, those happened at the same time. There must be a causation there. So I'm going to have to keep doing that, or else I'm going to lose my edge and I'm going to become a pedestrian player.
And I don't even think you think of it that way. I still think in the back of his mind, he doesn't know if he's good enough to do it or not yet. And he has to play at that level, full go, 110%.
But at some point,
and that's not a negative towards him. That's just your mental makeup.
But at some point, you did know you were good enough, right?
Yeah.
And then it's just, this is my routine. This is how I play. I don't want to change anything because this is how I've gotten here.
Yeah, like,
I agree with you.
Right.
I mean, when you look at him, he does not, like, if you had a bodybuilding contest between him and Tony Gonzalez, he's getting smoked. I mean, he's kind of a skinny tight end, to be honest with you.
And by the way, when you meet him out and about, he is the nicest,
most gentle guy.
He gets
such
it.
A great guy.
He is a wonderful, wonderful guy. So why does he turn into a monster when he goes on the field? Well, the answer is...
That's how he drives himself. You're absolutely right. And that's why Andy Reid, I think you can genuinely take Andy Reid at his word that we don't want... He can't lose that because that is part of how he goes and gets ready to play the game and how he plays at a high level. So we don't want to take that away from him. I totally get Andy Reid. It is a hard problem to figure out because I don't think he's the guy that's going to go, you know, sit in the corner and suck his thumb if you get after him.
No.
But I think he really does feel like, I need to be up. I need to be on the edge to be the guy I need to be.
Guys, when you're on that edge and you're playing in that position, because I've been there, you're playing that position, and then all of a sudden somebody disrespects you or does something that, you know, that first guy in says this, and you just see red and you just lose it. And that happens. And that's what happens to him. He can't control it. He needs to learn to control that because that's not good.
Yeah.
You know, playing at that edge and playing with that spirit and playing with that extra motivation is great, but you can't lose it because you're going to get pushed. They're going to push your buttons because in the NFL, and they know, and they'll find your weakness, and they'll try to exploit it.
NFL history is filled with guys who have the exact same thing that Travis Kelce has that pushing him that don't get flagged for 15 every single game.
Absolutely, but there's plenty of guys that do.
Yeah. What I'm saying is the two aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. Like, you can have that.
Who's the line?
And hone it to where it goes up to the edge but doesn't go over the edge, or at least not as often as it seems to with
them. If you don't live in this town, you would think of Travis Kelce was the biggest jerk of all time. You know, I mean, if you didn't know him, now he's a star now with his, you know, whatever show he had, you know, whatever. But so maybe that's not a great example.
Kelce. But no, yeah. I'm with you. But he's the guy that if you're watching the game, you hate him.
I mean, he's throwing the flag and throwing it back at the official. Jason Sutherland
in Missouri basketball. Yeah. He's the linebacker
for the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, I think he's the biggest scumbum.
Vontae Berfic?
He's the biggest scumbum of all time. But I've heard that he's a great guy off the field, and you know, a lot of people like him. But I wouldn't cross the street to meet this guy. What a bad guy he is. But the reality of the situation is he's actually just, he has to live on that edge too. He's got that personality that pushes him over the top, and he does stupid things. And there's a lot of guys like that. I mean, think about through the history of this game. You know, Pac-Man Jones is another guy that, I mean, he lived on the edge of but he let that bleed over.
Well, Marcus Peters is there, too.
Now, we haven't seen him lose it,
but Marcus Peters is the same way, and I think Andy Reid struggles with that as well. You know, forget about the national anthem thing. I'm putting that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when he lost his mind against the Texans.
the ball out of bounds in Carolina, I think it was.
When he lost it against Keenan Allen. Now, Keenan Allen went down, and that kind of ended it. But when he's getting beat, you're in trouble. Because, I mean, I think then he's like, well, I'm going to make it a fight.
And why does that happen?
You know, he's almost got that Mike Tyson. I'm going to bite your ear. I can't beat you. I know I can't beat you. Or at least I'm not beating you right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to make it a fight. I'm going to make it an argument. I'm going to make it a whizzing match.
Yep.
And I think they're wired very similar on those things.
One thing Andy Reid said yesterday, which I think might be key, is he mentioned he's getting it from all angles. The players are getting on him now about it. I mean, I've always thought, and you've been in that spot, a coach can tell you one thing, can discipline you one thing, but when your peers are telling you, that has to carry more weight, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. And it's hard to do when, once again, this is a guy that's really, really well-liked in the locker room, is really the leader of this team, does a lot of great things for the team and in the community, and then all of a sudden now you've got to get on him. It's hard to do that. But I think now the guys are saying for his best interest and the best interest of this team, it really needs to be kind of halted.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the KU and MU football programs and where the coaches are right now, Barry Odom and David Beatty. That's next here on the program. Wager is placed between Harley and I. Chiefs, Cowboys, who goes further? My chance to get back, I had to buy him a Jason Witten jersey back in the day.
And now.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
So we'll see. Chiefs, the wager is whoever goes further in the playoffs. Neither one of them make it. It's regular season record. Both of them make it. Doesn't matter if one's 9-7 and one's 16-0. It's whoever goes further in the playoffs.
Come on,
Chiefs.
You're a mistrust of the Cowboys' greatness. Looked pretty good Sunday.
I, you know what? That game was a tough one for me to watch, Cowboys-Broncos. Tim, you know why?
Because you didn't want the Broncos to win, but...
That's true, yes. And I got the under on both teams. So somebody, I was like, tie? It's about win totals. Tie might not be bad. I was thinking, okay, I'll take a tie because it's not a win.
Just when you think you're ready to bury the Denver Broncos, they find a way to play the way they did in that game. Defensively, up front, really, really good. I keep thinking they're going to get
old. Trevor Siemian looked really, really
good. Absolutely, Trevor Siemian looked great. You
four TDs, making hundreds of thousands.
Somebody told me, or I heard a stat, that over the last like 16 games or something, he's got two touchdowns in each game or something, like more than anybody else. Some crazy stat that this kid's been playing well under the radar.
Yeah. Guess who just traded him? Traded him away.
Did you?
Yeah, I'm an idiot. I traded him to Jake, too.
Didn't you say that? You said that.
I liked him, but
I
needed...
I know, but you said that like a couple weeks ago. Watch, Trevor Siemian's going to be great now that I traded him away.
I did, because I said I had to get under the cap.
Yeah.
And so I got a bad tight end. He did score a touchdown. I'm not going to mention who. I got a bad tight end and a fourth-round pick, and I got hosed.
Yeah, well,
I got to start caring more in my fantasy leagues.
You used to care.
I did. I used to spend hours.
You got a lot of things on your mind right now.
I was so thank you. Thanks for noticing. It is the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHDB, coming to you live from the Rally House Studios. Tim Grunhard with us here in the program. Mizzou and KU, David Beatty and Barry Odom.
Okay.
Is one of them in more trouble than the other? Should one of them be in more trouble than the other?
I think they're...
One of them look worse to you than the other?
Well, I think Missouri looks really bad right now. And, it's, you know, talk to some of the people out there that go to the games. At the very end of that game, the only people in the stands were the players' parents.
Families, yeah.
And families. And that's tough. You know, against Purdue, you know, a team that they thought that they could beat, that's a tough one. But on the other hand, you know, KU struggling, you know, against MAC teams, that's not a good thing either. But just some of the stuff I've heard and read about KU is that, you know, it almost like Beatty's still trying to feel this team out a little bit. The Bender kid, they like him, but, you know, they're feeling out some of the offensive linemen. They rotated some guys in the second half, and they ran the ball pretty efficiently in the second half. I still think they're trying to get their feet underneath him. Whether that's an excuse or not, I don't know. I mean, you would think by this time they would ever have an understanding of personnel and what they want to do. But I feel like they feel like they're really close to figuring it out. I'm not sure about if Missouri's quite ready to start figuring this thing out or not. You know, Luck is a great quarterback, and I really like the way he gets the ball around the field. But, you know, defensively, they're just in a bad position, letting Damani Cross go you know, for a lot of different reasons is what I heard. I mean, just was not getting along with the staff, wasn't getting along with some of the players, and it was kind of toxic. And, you know, so I'm hoping that turns around a little bit, too.
Why couldn't he figure that out in the offseason?
Well,
that's the problem. Where he may very well have needed to go. It's when he got around to getting it done that is just he's going to have to wear and is inexcusable.
And I worked with Damani for a year at KU, and I like Damani, but he does live on the edge. He's a pretty intense guy, but he's a Missouri guy, right? And he's kind of a Missouri legend over there. I mean, a lot of people, when you run across Missouri people, and I was with Damani, they loved him. I think that, you know, just like you said, you're bleeding that black and gold, and you want to give this guy every opportunity to have success at his school. And I think that they just held on to him a little bit long.
That being said, and you've been a coach, and I know no coach would want to hear this, to me, it's as much about who you can get as it is about giving him the time, right? Yeah. If I could get Chip Kelly to Mizzou, I'm sorry, Barry Odom's gone. Yeah. If I were the athletic director, because I know what the alums want is wins.
Les Miles would be a perfect fit.
You think he'd be a great fit there?
Yeah, and I don't think this is. I'm not firing Odom yet. I mean, I hope he has success.
No, I'm not either.
But
I don't know that either one of those guys.
No,
would
I don't
take
think
it.
So. I think last he's been in that he's been in the SEC and he's won there.
All right, Tim, great stuff, buddy, and thanks again for all your kind words. I really appreciate
it. No problem, buddy.
Will Harris talking college football next.